I'm going to start today with a physics lesson. I know you came for the Bible, but I promise this will lead somewhere. There was a brilliant physicist named Werner Heisenberg. He spent his life studying deep about the nature of reality, studying the smallest building blocks of the universe. What he found, we now refer to as the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Here's the gist. You can ask two questions about an atom, specifically an electron. Where is it? Or where is it going? As a priest, my third question might be, what is an atom? But here's the strange part that Heisenberg found. You can know the exact position of an atom, but once you know that, you cannot know precisely the atom's direction. You can know where an atom is, but you cannot simultaneously know where an atom is going. And it's not that our instruments are too crude or our scientists haven't gotten the equations right yet. This is woven into the fabric of reality. It's a law of atomic physics. I've been thinking about this a lot this week, which means it must have been a slow week at the cathedral. But I've been thinking about this because this is a lot like our faith in some ways. There are times when we know exactly where we are. The diagnosis comes back, and it has a name, cancer or heart failure or Alzheimer's. The marriage has ended, or the phone rings with news that it's so devastating that life forever will be split into before and after. And yet our faith tells us that God is with us. We know our exact position. We may be facing darkness, but we're doing it in God's presence. And the instant we know where we are, where we stand, we start to ask about the other question, the question of direction. Where is this going? Where is God leading me? Why? Why is this happening? But here's what Heisenberg knew about atoms and what our faith teaches us about God. You can know exactly where you are, but it's impossible to simultaneously know precisely where you are going. Because we can't know where we are and also know where we're being taken. And the more we demand answers, the more we realize that we will never, at least not in this lifetime, get a precise response. When we demand to know why, we're often met with silence, not because we haven't prayed hard enough, not because our faith is too shallow, not because God is taking a summer vacation, although that makes sense this time of year. But what I believe is that not knowing is simply part of what it means to walk, to journey with a God who is infinitely greater than we are. God says it this way through the prophet Isaiah, "My thoughts are not your thoughts, nor my ways your ways." In other words, maybe faith isn't meant to answer every time we ask the question, why? And all of that brings us to the reading we heard from Genesis today. To me, this is one of the hardest passages in the whole Bible. A father, Abraham, a son, Isaac, a mountain, Moriah, a knife, and a command from God that leaves me deeply unsettled. And if we come to this story asking why, Genesis hands us almost nothing in response. It never says why God chose to test Abraham this way. It gives us no window into Abraham's thoughts. And I'm sure there were so many through the three-day journey to this mountain and up the mountain. It tells us nothing about what Isaac felt. God simply says, take your son, your only son, whom you love. And then he's told to sacrifice him. I think that that phrase is deliberate. Your only son, whom you love. God is reminding Abraham of everything he stands to lose, and then 3 days walking, carrying this burden, this knowledge that no parent should ever have to live with. Isaac is carrying the wood for the sacrifice, not knowing that he is going to be the sacrifice. And I have so many questions about this text. I imagine you do also. For example, where was Sarah, Isaac's mother, in all of this? Did she know what her husband was setting out to do? The next time we see Sarah, she is on her deathbed, maybe dying of heartbreak. What did Isaac do when he was tied up, when he figured out what his dad was planning to do with him? Did he ever speak to his father again? The Bible never mentions them talking again. Did he go to therapy? I sure hope so. I was talking with Tom O'Dell earlier this week, and he told me that back when he was in Virginia, he was leading a Bible study on this chapter from Genesis, and nobody could make sense of it. Nobody could explain why God would ask Abraham to do such a thing. And finally, a gentle woman, Tom said she was one of the gentlest, kindest souls in the parish, spoke up. And she said, to be honest, this passage never really troubled me that much. I just assumed that Isaac was a teenager. But in all seriousness, sometimes faced with a difficult text, or maybe even more so faced with difficult or even terrible circumstances in our own lives, we go to them expecting a clear answer. We want an answer to why. And the most honest thing we might be able to say is, I don't know. I don't know why this is happening. Can't you hear that same uncertainty about the direction of things in the psalm we read today? How long, O Lord? How long, O Lord, will you hide your face from me? I can't tell you how many times I've sat at bedsides in hospitals or stood beside people at grave sites where people desperately wanted an answer. Why did this happen? Why now? Or why to someone so young? Or why them? Why this person I loved? And I can't tell you how often the only thing I can say is, I don't know. Many of life's deepest wounds don't come with a satisfying answer. Now, that doesn't mean there's never any answer. After all, in fairness, we can wring some answers out of this passage today. This passage is a time when Abraham's faith is forged. This passage is a time when God recommits to his promise. All of that's true. And the same is probably true of our own lives. There may be moments when we go through something terrible, and then we look back later and can see how God brought something good out of our circumstances. I've been there, and I imagine you have also. But that's not always a perfect answer. Because ask the father whose compassion became deeper after his daughter died, whether he would give up that compassion to have his daughter back. Of course we know he would. He may have grown more caring, but that growth doesn't always justify the loss. That's why a search for all of these answers can leave us so empty. The truth is, I think we're oftentimes not really searching for an explanation. I think what we're really searching for is an assurance that we are loved, that we are valued, that we are never alone. So instead of looking at this reading today and asking why, let's look at it and ask who. As I prayed about this passage and read over it again and again this week, I saw something that I had never before noticed. Abraham never demands that God gives him an answer. God, why are you doing this? God, why my son? God, why him? And also, Abraham never really receives an explanation. But he keeps listening, he keeps trusting, he keeps taking the next step. Eventually, Isaac asks the heart-wrenching question of his father. The fire and the wood are here, but where is the lamb? Abraham's answer doesn't try to explain things, but it does point to who. Abraham says, God will provide. He doesn't know when, he doesn't know how, but he does know who. And that's the thing about faith that I think so many of us can get backwards. We think faith means finally having the answers to all of our questions of why. But I believe that faith is really what happens when we learn to live with this uncertainty principle. In his novel, Till We Have Faces, C.S. Lewis tells the story of Queen Oruwal, who spends her whole life rehashing this terrible grievance against God. God had taken the one she loved, the person she loved, and she wanted an answer. So she writes it all down, page after page after page, a long, bitter complaint demanding her day in court where she wants God to answer all of her questions. And at last she gets it, and as she stands before God, she reads her complaint aloud. But as she reads and reads and reads, something begins to shift. Something gives way in her soul. And in God's presence, this complaint falls apart in her hands. The case she spent her whole lifetime building falls silent. And eventually, she looks at God and she says, "You yourself are the answer. Before your face, all questions die away." And that's it. That's the answer to why. It's not a reason. It's a who. It's God. Who will provide? Abraham's declaration, God will. Isaac asks, where is the lamb? And there, caught in the thicket, was a ram. God providing. Who is present through all of this? God is present, and God was present the whole time. The 3 days trudging to that mountain and then up that mountain, I imagine that Abraham couldn't hear God's voice over the roar of his own dread. But at the last moment, he hears God speaking, not shouting from the horizon, but close enough that Abraham hears his name said twice, Abraham, Abraham. Close enough that God is able to stop the knife. In the ancient world, the idea was you sacrificed what you loved in order to appease the gods. But the God of Abraham says, do not lay a hand on the boy. This is, of course, the same God who spoke life into existence and called it good. The same God who loves life, Isaac's and mine and yours. And when it was over, Abraham gave a name to this mountain. He didn't name it for what he had suffered. He didn't name it for what he had learned. He named it for who showed up. He called it Yahweh Yireh, meaning the Lord will provide, the place where God was present. But this, of course, isn't the end of this story, not really anyways. This mountain points to another mountain and another father and another son and another 3 days of waiting, another hill carrying wood. Just as Isaac carried this wood up Moriah, Jesus carried the cross up Calvary. Again, the waiting, the uncertainty, again, the suffering. But on Moriah, Isaac was spared, a ram took his place. On Calvary, there was no substitute, only an incomprehensible love willing to go to the cross, a love willing to climb that hill, a love willing to carry that wood, a love willing to suffer with us and for us to assure us that we will never be alone in our pain. It's so hard to hear the horror of Calvary, to read of Jesus' scream, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why? And there's no answer from the sky. The why hangs there unanswered. And yet we know that Friday was not the end of the story. We know that Sunday comes, and Mary Magdalene stands outside an empty tomb, wanting answers, wanting an explanation, asking why. And yet she hears a single word, her name, Mary. No explanation, no answer to all of her questions, just Mary, spoken by the risen Christ. Because what Mary needed most wasn't an answer. It was to know that she was not alone, to know that she mattered, to know that she was loved. So if you're facing grief in your own life today, or fear, or disappointment, or a darkness that seems all-consuming, I may not be able to tell you why. You may not be able to figure out that answer. But if you stop asking why and instead dare to ask who will provide for my deepest need? Who will stand with me in my darkest hour? Who will love me always and exactly as I am? The answer to those questions is loud. The answer to those questions is clear. And the answer to those questions is God. God will provide. God will be with you. God is here. Always. Amen.